there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 186. This is the 186th edition here at the Caffeination, but this is the seasonal edition here. We're starting to get into the gift-giving mode. We have all kinds of fun objects that you might want to purchase, some other ones that you might just laugh at people who do. There's a great amount of information nestled in today's show, and speaking of all the stuff you can find, we'd just like to send a big hearty hello and welcome to all of our new and returning listeners that are out there. All the new listeners, hello. You are listening to the Caffeination Podcast. This is the high-octane world of caffeine and technology. They're more than just topics around here. They are passions. They are the reason that I get up in the morning to do this kind of stuff. I mean, they're the things I think about when I think about, a few of my favorite things. You know what I mean? Kind of a weird explanation, so hopefully we'll just gloss right on over that. All right, and to all the returning listeners, all the repeat offenders out there, thank you very much for continuing to allow us to invade your earlobes. Hopefully you've enjoyed the episodes, either that or just into a little bit of the pain, and then, hey, please keep coming back. This is, of course, episode 186. Airing or direct live to hard drive 12/2/2007. The Caffeination Podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All the other shows have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content, and they're all listed over at techpodcasts.com. We're also a proud member of the Blueberry Podcast Network. It's a social podcast network, kind of like MySpace for podcasts. And I just remembered that I forgot to tell you where you can find this show. If somebody happened to have gifted you an MP3, somebody happened to have played one for you, or you just happen to find it on the wilds of the interwebs, then you can find this show. It's home base, it's center, it's everything is located at www.caffeination.com. That's caffeination.com. All right, we have a great show lined up for you today. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the following: mugs, Tesla coils, manholes, eyelashes, plants, and of course the ozone. I know, a little bit of an eclectic show, to say the least. But one thing we did want to get out of the way nice and early, just talk to you a little bit about our sponsor. If you're looking for a better way to present or collaborate during your conference calls, your solution is simple: web conferencing with GoToMeeting. During your call, everyone logs on to GoToMeeting.com and your computer screen shows up on all of their monitors. It's like you're all in the same room. GoToMeeting is perfect for sales or product demos, training, or real-time collaboration. Plus, you're not charged a permanent fee like some of the other providers that are out there. You can meet as often as you want for as long as you need. With GoToMeeting, you can meet with anyone, anywhere, anytime without ever having to leave your office. You'll not only end up saving time, but a boatload of money as well. See for yourself, try GoToMeeting free for 45 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/podcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/podcast. Try GoToMeeting today. All right, we'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination Podcast. They allow us to do all the fun things that we can do, like hosting the Caffeination Podcast. All right, I'm going to get on into the meat and the potatoes. Just one little bit of a note right off the bat. If you tune in over at techpodcasts.com this Saturday, the 8th of December, if everything goes correctly, I should be part of the live show, the live Tech Podcast Roundtable. We're going to be talking about what you would like for Christmas. So I have 5 things that I'm going to be putting out there. You might have heard them, you might not, so hopefully you'll head on over there and check it out. I think there's like 4 or 5 other people involved, so you're going to hear all kinds of crazy, cool, fun, geek things. So hopefully you'll head on over there and check that out at its proper time. All right, we have a fun little bit of tech to start off this thing. We have in the past found some interesting Tesla coil patterns. We've seen the ones that did the Mario Brothers theme. We've seen just massive ones. And then there's the ever-present picture of Nikola Tesla supposedly sitting in the middle of the electricity. Actually, a lot of people don't know that's a little bit of photography fakery. Sorry. Basically, they did 2 pictures in the same frame. One with him sitting in the empty room, one of them with the machine turned on, because he probably would have been electrocuted if he was in the midst of all the rays. Now, up here, we have a little bit more photography fakery. I can't speak correctly today. I really don't know why that is. This is a Tesla Christmas tree. Makes festivity scary again. This one's linked up from over at gizmodo.com. Basically, there's a massive Tesla coil. Somebody built a wire and steel frame to shape it like a Christmas tree and then put it around the Tesla coil. So the lightning actually managed to go through and formed the shape of a Christmas tree. However, if you look at the Christmas tree, you'll see that it's three different colors. The big star on top, she is yellow. The tree, she is green. And the trunk slash presents at the bottom, she is red. All of that, of course, is done with Photoshop. None of it is done with the ever-present green electricity. I'm pretty sure all the electricity is just going to come out the standard garden variety blue, or the actually the storm variety blue. That takes away just a little bit from it. I mean, yeah, what do you really expect? I mean, everybody knows electricity has that kind of blue-white look to it. You might get a little purple thrown in there every once in a while. You could do this with flames. All you'd have to do is add a little bit of different elements to the actual flame in the area. I think green you'd get from copper. Yellow, I'm not really sure. Cobalt, I know, is blue. I can't remember. I had all these at one point. I had them all lined up. I knew it, what all the different colors of the flames meant from chemistry. I think that was one of the lectures I really paid some attention to. All right, moving right along. We have a little bit of a. I wouldn't call this a retraction. We had a fun little bit of a listener feedback from one of our listeners, Joe, who actually posted a response to the cell phone exploding story that we talked about on the last show. Basically, the manufacturers have come out and said that these are obviously low-quality third-party battery replacements. And on one hand, you would like to believe them and think that, okay, because they're not held up to the rigorous quality standards ever present at LG and all the other companies, then, you know, of course, then this is why you're having this problem. If they're in such an unregulated market, for instance, the Asian markets might be a little bit less regulated than here, at least that's what they would like you to believe, then, you know, this could obviously slip through the cracks, things could go wrong, and mistakes have been made. However, on the flip side of that, what I think when I see this whole story is that there's no way to prove that it was a third-party battery. So the cell phone company at this point has there's no backlash against them, even if it wasn't. Even if they don't know that caused it. I mean, because, Sony and Dell, not Cell and Dony, both came out with stories that said, you know, we really don't know about the quality or the reasons why their laptops were exploding back when they did. And it turned out to be very, you know, it wasn't necessarily the easiest thing to do, but lithium ion batteries can, under certain circumstances and certain stresses, you know, explode. Now, the two stories that we talked about, one man worked in basically in a quarry, and the other guy worked as a welder. So it's very possible that these phones were subject to extreme temperature changes, concussive blasts in the case of the man who worked with demolitions. So, I mean, I would almost be more understanding of the fact that, okay, this guy was working in a quarry through, let's just say, the past 2 years. His phone has been, you know, in his breast pocket during all these different blasts and everything like that, and the concussive shock waves have somehow damaged the phone to such an extent where it exploded after time. So this could be a traditional wear and tear kind of matter. Now, I mean, in an incredibly scary sense on one hand, because you're like, wow, you know, I'm not that I plan to go out and start blowing a lot of stuff up, although, you know, explosions are by their very nature very cool. You know, you could almost understand that. And then when you look at the welder, okay, let's just say that the cell phone was subject to extreme heat. The guy obviously has gloves and protective gear and all that other stuff on. So while he's welding, the area around you gets hotter. I used to weld in one of my previous jobs. You know, I was not necessarily the welder, but I would do spot welding and stuff like that, you know, and the area around you gets hot. You can get burned from, you know, like you can get sunburned from the arc of the welder that you're using. You know, there's a whole bunch of different things that can happen. So it's not necessarily, you know, like an office environment. I have, you know, when I see one of these people who's working on help desk and, you know, something like that, and then the phone explodes, then you have a cause for concern, at least in my perspective. While, yes, the story is believable that these are third-party batteries, I do not count out the fact that they could just be products of extreme circumstances. Incredibly tragic happenstances, but But at the same point in time, you could almost understand how technology in general would fail in those kind of extreme environments. So, I mean, especially, you know, after long years of use or something like that. Now, if, you know, we have almost no background information on any of these stories. So we don't know if the guy just picked his cell phone up the day before, he's wearing it in his pocket for the first time, and then boom. And something goes wrong. Or we don't know what the guy was doing beforehand. We don't know if somehow he got shocked by the electric shovel that he was working on, then it went off. You know, I mean, there's mitigating circumstances all over the place. So it behooves us to not directly lay blame, but I would not give them a free pass. You know, I'd make sure, you know, you just keep a weather eye out. Is your phone hotter than normal? That kind of stuff. Because, you know, one of the things that they said, a lot of Dell laptop batteries that they noticed about them was that they actually seemed to run hotter. You know, when the machine was closed, when it was off or something like that, the battery would feel hotter than a normal battery. And, you know, it's a indication of a possible failure state in the future. Now, that doesn't mean if you go out and you touch your laptop and it's not cool to the touch that you might have a battery that might go. For instance, my PowerBook, you know, that I have from work, that thing you could routinely, you know, give yourself a minor burn on just because it naturally runs hot. But there's things that are outside the realm of the norm that you need to pay attention to. So hopefully that'll kind of clear up some of the stuff that's out there. And thank you very much, Joe, for writing in, and everybody else who's written in about that. We have another thing here that we usually don't get in on the industry stuff and stuff that's playing around on the internet, just because that's not usually my bag. That's not usually something that I even find interesting listening about. But this one just has reaches beyond the community in which it located itself. First found this over at pennyarcade.com. Didn't link up to that article due to a proliferation of profanity. Not that that offends me, but this is a generally child-safe and family-friendly show. So we're going to link up to a slightly less informative but no less interesting article. This one's from Joystick. Basically, the latest developments in Gerstmann-Gate. Here's the lowdown on it. A man by the name of Jeff Gerstmann worked at GameSpot, a very popular site for people go to for reviews on the latest video games. Jeff gave a game, Kane and Lynch, that recently came out by the producer Eidos, a very unfavorable review. Now, if you check out the reviews on most games that come out, they get anywhere between a 7 and a 9. So any statistical variation seems to be different. It seems to be very, very different. So he gave it a 6. He said he would not pay good money to buy it. Now, you can actually do a search on YouTube. I'm not going to link up to it or anything like that, just because I think it's gotten enough publicity. I just wanted to kind of make you aware, wanted to kind of inform you about different aspects and put a different slant on it, basically. He gave a very unfavorable review before Thanksgiving when the game came out. Apparently, the company that was being reviewed, Eidos, was incredibly incensed at this. Sources have said, you know, unnamed sources on bulletin boards or whatnot, have said that, you know, Eidos pulled hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of ads from GameSpot's website in response to receiving an unfavorable review. And then they also have canceled future hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of ad placements because of this. After Thanksgiving was over and after most of the holiday games had been released, GameSpot fired Gerstmann. Now, they have refused to say that this is because of that review. However, most people have kind of put two and two together, especially considering when they fired him, the game review department as it was shut down. If you go over to GameSpot, you cannot currently leave a comment on any of their game reviews. Or I think at least on that one. I know on the Kane and Lynch one you can't, and I think on a couple others. I don't know if they've opened comments back up, but I could be wrong by the time you listen to this. So basically all of the other editors have shut down production. They are not writing, kind of in a show of solidarity. There have been different marches in front of the GameSpot, the CNET headquarters. So, you know, it's... One of the sources have actually said there's a little bit of games playing that was going on here, specifically from the website Valleywag, that basically said they knew that once they fired him that the review departments as they stood were not going to stand for it and were going to not do anything. They were going to go on a solidarity strike. So they waited until all of the games had been released, all of the major releases for the holiday season, and then just decided to then can the guy. So that way, you know, at least they had all the big ones out of the way. You know, Mario Galaxy, Halo 3, all that other stuff that was going around. So that, you know, tends to trend, at least in my aspect. It seems to be a lot more of an interesting idea. Now, the problem that I have with this whole situation isn't necessarily that the guy got fired. Now, let me, you know, not beat around the bush. This guy was a very seasoned veteran. He'd been working there for a long time. He was one of their senior editors on this, you know. So he's not just some rookie that screwed up or, you know, used improper language or anything like that. I saw the review online. It was a video review as well as a written review. It was, you know, pretty much dead on. I mean, it wasn't like he was going out of his way to pick apart aspects of gameplay just to, you know, kind of down the publisher or anything. He was actually giving a very honest and forthright review. Not that I was going to purchase the game in the beginning, but you know, I certainly saw all the things that he was talking about and said, you know what, that's a very good reason. It's a very good review. It seems to be covered from top to bottom, and you know, pretty much I understand where he's coming from. That's all I ask from any review. I do, however, think it's ridiculous on Eidos's part to give or to ask a reviewing company to give them just a positive review. Now, I know it's very popular out there, and just want to assure everybody that, you know, that doesn't happen here. If I give you a review of a product and I say it's good, it's because I think it's good. I trade on my word. I trade on the fact that I would hope that you think that I am an expert on certain topics, not so much of an expert on others, but that I always give you an honest and forthright opinion. And I know all the guys over at Tech Podcast Network do the same. I know Todd has on many different occasions from the Geek News Central podcast done the same thing. And if you look at most people's websites when they talk about product reviews and everything, it says, we do not guarantee you a positive review. And I just think it's really good. It's kind of cathartic at one point because it is bringing it out into the sunlight. It is cauterizing this wound to some certain extent because people are going to start seeing that, oh, you know what? The reason that all these games trend from 7 to 9 on these review sites might be because of the fact that, well, some of them do just honestly suck. Some of them really aren't good gameplay, and it just so happens that the publisher paid for enough to get them up to a 7 or something like that. I mean, what are they saying? That if Kanan Lynch's producer or Eidos had somehow managed to pay that much more money, they would have gotten up to a 9 with the still with the same gameplay? It rankles me. You know, it really ruffles my feathers in the exact opposite direction that I wish them to be ruffled in. So we're gonna get off our soapbox. That's two little soapbox style topics right in a row. We have pretty much quick hits all the way out here, so hopefully you're gonna enjoy the rest of this stuff. First thing we have up here, a little bit of green technology from our fine friends over at ecogeek.org. Baking soda could help save the world. Apparently a company has managed to find a way to A company, by the way, is called SkyMine, has managed to find a way to pump the emissions from power plants. So coal-fired power plant creates all these nasty belching emissions into the sky. What they're doing is they take this, they filter those emissions through sodium hydroxide solution at the right temperature, apparently. I have no clue how they figure this stuff out. And then what is produced is pure, stable, food-grade sodium bicarbonate, known to the rest of the world as baking soda. So, I don't know if they would actually be using it for food, because I'm pretty sure other than a couple little, a couple volcanoes and a massive shortage of vinegar in the works, baking soda, you know, isn't really used for a lot other than the fact that there's going to be a lot of very clean fridges, a lot of nice-smelling cabinets out there. But, you know, this is just a great, I think it's much more of an idea that it's a stable product that's not really pollutant. You could probably put it into the ground. The only thing is it's a very, very much an alkali solution, so it would probably tend to trend the soil chemistry definitely more alkali, which some flowering plants seem to enjoy. You could also use it in all your fish tanks to, you know, counteract the acidity that most fish naturally produce. So there's a whole bunch of different uses for baking soda outside the standard baking practices. So I don't know exactly what they're going to be doing, and it just seems to be pretty cool. In general, it just seems to be a win-win for everybody. Apparently, there's massive amounts of research and development going into this, and it would scrub both the toxics and 80% of the carbon dioxide. That's insane. But this is cool. All right. The only thing that the author of the article actually says, he doesn't know if they can find enough sodium hydroxide to make this possible. Now, I really don't know how one would get sodium hydroxide, but I do know that in the next article by our new source, D-Vice, there's a concept art produced by a French artist slash designer, Matthew, not even going to try and pronounce his last name, but it's an interesting idea. Basically, it's a filtration system using natural plants, using real plants to actually, and kind of like an ionic breeze with a bubble, to filter air in your living space and produce clean air right out. So it doesn't just filter the air in and allow the little hothouse flowers to do their deal. You know, it doesn't just, you know, run it through there, allow the leaves to photosynthesize the carbon dioxide away. No. It also uses the root system. It uses the grass. It uses everything else that's in these little bubbles and pushes them back out there. Now, there's no word yet on the price, but it says prototypes are now for sale. Let me see if I can find a price. Yeah, I just saw that at the end. any day now, Internet. I don't even know. They just seem to be really cool. It's actually being housed at the Museum of Modern Art. They look like aloe plants. I don't really know if... I think it's awesome, but I don't really know. Yeah, there's no easily identifiable price point sitting there, so... Eh. Buyer beware, but still it's pretty cool. I like the idea. However, I go a little bit more old school around here. We just have plants in our house. No fancy filtration systems or anything like that. The only thing that you do have to be aware of, plants, yes, they do produce oxygen during the day. However, at night, they produce carbon dioxide just like the rest of the breathing people on the planet. So, you know, it does balance more towards the oxygen side of things, but you do have to be aware that they are producing carbon dioxide at night, unless they're currently engaged in photosynthesis, which you could do by, you know, putting sun lamps on them and stuff. All right, now, going from one little bit of very weird tech to yet another weird tech, weird bit of tech, resistance is quite futile with this. This is an Ohm's Law clock, again from D-Vice. They had a lot of great stories, so they make up a decent percentage of the news that we're going to be reporting today. Fantastic clock, and what it is, you know, ohm is the measurement of resistance with electricity. So there's different, I don't even know what Ohm's Law is, but I think it's a P over E, R over I, some kind of ratio of everything. It's like power over voltage. Yeah, it's power over voltage, sorry. So what they do is they have all different derivations of the power over voltage in each one of the segments of the clock, each one of the 12 segments, to actually, I guess, would simplify down to being 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. So it's pretty interesting. It's incredibly crazy, so I'm pretty sure electrical engineers would get a hoot out of this. The rest of the planet, going to be a little bit, there's going to be a lot of head scratching going on. Now, if I am completely off base with this, please let me know if I screwed something up. It's not just another language. It's power, something, voltage, and current are the four little pieces that are there. Somehow it all works together and you get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Or 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Sesame Street, of course. All right. Moving right on to this next thing. I don't know if your mom did this, but my mom definitely did, where they take the little tissue or the rag or something like that, they wipe it on their tongue, then they wipe the little spots off your cheeks and face and stuff. And the older you get, the worse it is. There's now a cleaner that's being put out there that has no relation chemically to that action. However, it is a no-rinse formula that has the name. It's called Mom Spit Multipurpose Cleaner. You gotta love the marketing that's surrounding this, because as soon as you say, I have some Mom Spit Cleaner, that it invokes a whole sense of self about the product. On one hand, you're like, wow, that's disgusting, because you use the word spit in the name of the product, but at the same point in time, it invokes a very, it's like an attention to detail, a very cleanliness, And the funny thing is that there's actually fragrance. I don't know, fragrance is associated with this. I don't know about your mother's, but my mom never had fig and green tea flavored or scented, lemon or white and white tea or unscented. No, it was always just, you know, garden variety. But it just seems to be an interesting idea. Now, this is a no-rinse cleanser for hands and face. I'm pretty sure it's alcohol-based, and of course it's marketed directly towards women, although I would kind of think it would be marketed more towards, I don't know, I guess that's the proper market, but hey, it's just kind of funny to see that as a title of anything, so I decided to pass it on to you. Now, every once in a while, there's some really crazy stuff that appears over at lifeaftercoffee.com. I read it because there's great technology, there's great coding information over there at different points in time, but at the same point in time, the guy usually finds some pretty fun stuff to post there as well. So he's found a link to some stuff over at Cafe Press, but it says, "Are you bored at work? Call a meeting." Now, this is basically a... a little chart that they have up, and you can get it on a t-shirt and everything. It says, you can see people, feel important, impress colleagues, draw charts, form subcommittees, and make meaningless recommendations. And it's all on company time. So, yeah, everybody's been to those meetings where you sit there and wonder silently and sometimes even not so silently, why exactly am I attending this? What exactly are we accomplishing by doing this? And I have heard tell that a camel is a horse designed by committee. So... I just thought I'd pass it along out there. It's a pretty fun gift idea for the closet meeting caller in that you know of. So hopefully you found that interesting. The next little thing we got up here is a little bit of functional urban art. Now, I like to label myself a functionalist. I do things that work. I like things that work. You know, frivolity is fine in and of itself, but you know, when you find something that is both beautiful and functional at the same point in time, it invokes a very deep-seated reaction within me. So they have three sets of very interesting pieces of urban art. The first up is from WebUrbanist.com, which is a fantastic site that I've recently found. There's three different selections of urban art that they actually found. The first is painted manhole covers. Now, these are unique and interesting manhole covers from Japan. They are still cast iron. They're probably still 300 pounds a piece. Each one is very unique. There's all different kinds of enamel painting in them. One looks like a shuriken. One looks like a samurai. Another one looks like a fire truck. There's carp, there's, you know, a galleon across high seas, and all of them are very unique, very interesting, and very intricate. So it's not like they took a garden variety manhole cover or something like that and just painted it. No, these had to be specially made, so I really think that's awesome. And you know what? I actually kind of think that it would be really cool to have that here in Philly. I mean, we have manhole covers all over the place like any big city does, so I'm pretty sure it would just add a little bit of flair to the city that's already very unique in and of itself. Now, the next thing up here is we have these things absolutely everywhere, and I don't think that they are exactly what they say they are on the page. Well, the page lists them as circuit boxes. Now, what these, basically everybody in the United States at least has very similar designs, specifically in urban areas. They're large telephone PBX boxes, basically. They're usually that ugly, like somewhere in between olive green and... or olive drab and like the Kelly green for St. Paddy's Day, some sickly combination of those two. They look kind of like the size and shape of a very thick bookcase. So what they found was actually different people have painted them to, you know, through the use of perspective and whatnot, have found ways to make them appear differently. So the first one that they have up there is basically a little window that appears with a bunch of birds sitting on it, so sitting on a balcony. And now these are all, you know, just the garden variety boxes. One person painted it to look like a fish tank, which I find awesome. There is actually a bookcase, and then there's another one where the PBX is actually sitting in the side of the house. Now, I really don't know if these are circuit boxes or whatnot, but I'm pretty sure the size and the shape of all of them are very much uniform. But one of them was actually placed right up against the building. They actually made like what looked like shutters on the window and a cat going into the window with a little butterfly flying out of it. And then the last little thing is completely off the charts. This is from Russia. They have four pictures of very, very strange and obtuse lampposts. So they're like cast iron and metal and steel sculptures that are actually lampposts at the same point in time. So the first thing's like this crazy scorpion where the actual stinger is the light. Another one is the like a wizard holding you know, like a balancing scale, and I don't know what lights up on him. There's two fish playing some sort of game. Then there's somebody swimming down, I'm assuming like hunting pearls or something like that, and he's holding the lamp. This is really cool and really awesome. So, I mean, I'd like to see this, more of this kind of stuff around Philadelphia. We have plenty of murals all over the place. There's gorgeous pieces of mosaic art all over the city. But at the same point in time, you know, it would be really neat to see, you know, like objects that have to be there, you know, parts of the infrastructure actually begin to come alive. I would think that'd be really cool. So hopefully we'll start to see something like that around here. I don't really have a lot of hope for it, but at the same point in time, you know, it'd be interesting to see. Hey, if anybody out there has any different, you know, hey, if there's pictures of something like that where you live, feel free to pass them along to us. Yeah, we'll gladly post them up there for you, or send us a link to your blog if you have it. Then the last little thing we have here is something that I just had to something that I just had to pass along. This one's found over at trendhunter.com. apparently you're no longer going to have to you know, all you women out there, or men if you are so inclined, are no longer going to have to you know, paste extra lashes on top of what you already have. No, this is there's a now going to be a drug that actually grows your eyelashes. Now the picture that they have is not a the picture that they have is hopefully not a result of this drug, but apparently a cancer drug had the side effect of having very thick and full lashes. Now, which is strange, at least I think it's a cancer drug. Wait one second. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Apparently a popular glaucoma medication. Completely off-kilter on that one, you know, because cancer usually makes you lose your hair. This is slightly different application. So a popular glaucoma drug has a side effect of having thicker and fuller lashes. So they found a way to, I guess, isolate that, and they're giving that to people who would like to have so-called thicker and fuller lashes. It seems kind of ridiculous. You know, body modification's all fine and well with me, but at the same point in time, you know, taking drugs, you know, to do things like that just kind of freaks me out on some level. So you'd never catch me doing that. Personally, I think my lashes are fine and thick and full on their own. So that about wraps up the tech tidbits section here for you today. That is your meat, and here we go with the potatoes. We have the caffeine and food section here. Two little links, then we're going to send you on your way. The first one's up here again from D-Vice. Actually, both of them are from D-Vice, believe it or not. This is an on-off coffee mug. Basically, when the mug is empty and cold, it's black, and it has the word off across the front of it. When you pour the coffee or whatever hot beverage you want into it, it actually changes the color of the mug to be white, and it says on, revealing that. So it's kind of a cool, you know, take off. At the same point in time, I don't really know if I like the off and on. I say, you know what, that's a really good, it's kind of obtuse when you look at it. You're like, okay, really, what are you saying here? It doesn't scream that, hey, I'm caffeinated. It doesn't scream that, yes, I have coffee, because I mean, you could drink cold coffee or something like that. I thought that it would be more along the lines of, you know, it should be speak or shh, something just a little bit more obtuse, because apparently, you know, the shh would be the black with the white lettering, so that would be in the cold state. You know, please don't talk to me, I'm not yet ready to face the world. And the speak would mean you are now allowed to speak with me, you can converse, I feel human once more. So I don't know if that would catch on or not, but you know, the on-off, really cool, really neat idea. But at the same point in time, I'm like, $25 for a mug, you probably won't catch me doing that. I have plenty of mugs from Boy Scouts, plenty of mugs from the place where I work. Everybody loves giving mugs now, so I'm a fan of that trend, and not really a fan of paying $25 for a standard size coffee mug. Alright, now the next little thing up we have here, again, this is a massive price increase. How would you like a teapot for $250? Well, yes, of course, it's designed by world-renowned artist and architect Michael Graves. But at the same point in time, this is a completely cordless this tea kettle. Yes, there is a there's no cord at all. There's a little warmer plate. There's a tea kettle. Both of them designed to fit exactly into one another. And then once you, I guess, turn it on, or once the kettle is set upon it, it heats it up and whistles and does all kinds of fun things. Yes, it's kind of pretty. It is to a certain extent. I don't like the whistler. The actual tip of the tea kettle is some kind of strange bird hood ornament, and it just seems to be completely off from the design of the rest of the teapot. It seems to kind of throw the whole thing into a very strange atmosphere, so I don't really know if I'd like it. And it's kind of caffeinated in the way that, you know, yeah, this is something you could use to drink caffeine, but at the same point in time, I don't know. It just doesn't speak to me, but I thought everybody out there might want to know about it, so, you know, I just decided to put it out there. Then the last little thing we're going to get to here is our Season of Giving, which is actually going to be further up in the show after this. The two charities that we've been talking about, we'd like to continue to talk about here, is the Penny Arcade Child's Play Charity. That's for all the money. There is no overhead for that one. All the money goes directly to sick kids to fund entertainment purposes, you know, toys, or you can buy toys and video games specifically for the hospitals that are located in your area. You can head on over to childsplaycharity.org and check that out. It's a fantastic cause, something very near and dear to my heart, something that I wish they had had earlier in my life, but I still benefited from video games at that point in time. It's a way to raise the social consciousness surrounding gamers. You know, we're not just people who commit atrocities because it's convenient to mention that somebody played a video game at one point in time in their life before they did something stupid. So, you know, on that hand, there's one thing. And then on the social conscious side, on the other side, again, we have Coffee Kids, which I found via CoffeeGeek.com, the preeminent coffee podcast. We're much more of an amalgam of two different worlds, and they're incredibly high-end coffee stuff, so you head on over to check them out as well. I have to see if they have a promo, because I'd like to actually play it for you, but at the same point in time, I'm like, hey, for all those people here who are really interested in coffee, They have some crazy stuff. But, you know, Coffee Kids is basically a charity whose entire focus is creating different and alternative methods for supporting families within coffee-growing communities, so that should the crop go bad or something like that, the entire community is not devastated. So it's a way that, you know, to raise the standard of living, basically. It says coffee farmers earn as little as 4 cents a pound from the coffee they pick by hand. And that's ridiculous when you really think about it, which is also at the same point in time when I also support the fair trade coffees. And we'll talk about that, I guess, on the next show. But hopefully everybody out there is going to check out those two charities. You can donate to whatever you want to, but those are just the charities that are near and dear to my heart. So hopefully you find them interesting. And, you know, hey, let me know what you think about the way that we're doing the show. We are going to be reintroducing the PodSafe music in the very near future. I just haven't had a chance to actually sit there and listen to a whole bunch of good PodSafe music. Every time I sit down and do it, just different thing goes on. So we're going to make some time to hopefully check that out. So I'd like to thank everybody for listening to this show. We like to think this was a good show. Hopefully you think so as well. All right. This has been the Caffeination Podcast number 186. This is the seasonal edition. We're going to be getting more into the spirit as we head on towards the holiday. This, after all, is only the 2nd of December 2007. So if you'd like to find this podcast and you've been listening in, you just hadn't heard it at the beginning, you can find this listed and rather nestled lovingly over at www.caffeination.com. That's caffeination.com for all of you who really don't care to spell it out. And we are a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. We're also a proud member of the Blueberry Podcast Network. That's like blueberry without the E's. That's blueberry.com. And Tech Podcasts, of course, is TechPodcasts.com. So if all that spelling, then you know where we are. If you'd like to send us a comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, whatever else you'd like to throw our direction, please feel free to do so at caffeination@gmail.com. And you know, anything else you'd like to contact us with, please feel free to head on over to caffeination.com. All the information on how to get a hold of us is over there. MySpace, Facebook, LinkedIn. I mean, I think LinkedIn. I don't even know. There's a whole bunch of stuff over there. We'd like to thank everybody for listening, and stay caffeinated, people.